Thanks to our sponsor, Walker Digital, who've stepped in to help the Numbers Game podcast with their social media. Walker Digital are a digital marketing agency covering strategy, content, video, implementation, and education. The team at Walker have spread the word of our clients and love working with businesses doing good things, helping them to grow and reach more people so they can scale and get larger. I know personally the first thing I did when growing our business was to outsource social media, blogs, and copywriting because I knew it was something that was not the best use of my time, and the girls at Walker Digital smashed it. Sometimes you need to walk before you can run. Find out more at their website, WLKR.digital. This episode does not class as personal advice. It is general and does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. People may also hold positions in the companies discussed. Welcome to episode 13 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jason, and as always, I'm here with Nick and Marty. Marty, how you going, mate?
Oh, mate, I'm absolutely pumped as usual, and we've got so much to talk about today, so ready to go. Nick, how are you going?
Yes, I'm good. Out of lockdown and really enjoying being back at work. Mental wealth is what we're talking about today, and this is something that's close to my heart. I know close to yours and yours as well, Marty.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, really looking forward to this one.
On this week's episode, I'm going to talk about burnout, anxiety, and how it can affect your physical and mental health. What have you got, Nick?
Experimenting. So experimenting with things to fix the issues, as you've just explained. So, you know, always trying different things to see what works for you from a mental wealth point of view.
And boys, sometimes you got to risk it for the biscuit. And I'm going to talk about why gambling is built upon losers. So I'm going to chat about that and also a lot of mental wealth. Let's play.
Reading the play this week, we've added a few extra bits to the segment. Not only will we talk about interesting facts, advice, and industry insights, in the next couple of episodes, we'll also bring in our favorite books and podcasts, things we're listening to and reading that have given us those extra nuggets of gold. This week, I might crack in, guys, if that's all right. I've got a thing that I came across in news.com.au. Writer Ben Nash wrote up an article about micro-investing. Now, you boys are probably more across this day-to-day with your clients in the financial planning kind of area, but I found it really interesting, mostly from a numbers point of view, because the small numbers you can put in each day, what they mean over the long term. So, let me go into it. So, micro-investing, there's apps like eToro, Raise, Stocklight. You'll probably start to see them pop up on your ads on your feed if you start to kind of Google them and look them up. And basically, you can invest as little as a dollar. And they will put that dollar into ETFs, stocks, property, all sorts of things. But what I found powerful was the compounding and the numbers over time. So there's one thing I regret, which is probably a losing it segment as well, is not putting money away when I was younger. I started working at Macca's at like 14 and 9 months, worked my ass. I was addicted to working. I love being around people. And I would have earned so much money between 15 and 25. At 25, previous episode, credit card debt, broke, basically bankrupt. I had no money. What the hell did I do with all that money over 10 years? I wish I'd done this. So let me get into it. Putting in the money into Raise, Stake, Stocklight, eToro, if you did as little as $10 a day, so $70 a week, that's probably getting up there, but it's what most couples could afford, $5 each for a coffee a day. I'll do the numbers over 10 years. So ASX over the last 20-year return, sorry, has averaged close to 9% return. So over 10 years, if you'd put aside $10 a day, you would have invested $36,500. But with those returns, you'd have almost $55,000 sitting in your account. So not bad. But it's the next 10 years where the compounding really does its thing. So the next 10 years, you do it again, you've got $180,000 in your account from investing $10 a day over 20 years. So pretty good result, right?
Well, you could be working at Macca's, like you said, and have a nice little portfolio going there, Jace.
That's it. Well, let me go.
There's always time to go back, mate.
So if you did that at 20, if you did it at 20 and you kept on going, let's take it to 30 years, your investment is now worth $500,000. You've got $500,000. And if you did it 10 more years until you're 60 and you're ready to retire, that's $1.14 million if you put $10 aside a day for 40 years.
So good. And, you know, I've talked about it before, but that's the power of superannuation as well. That's why we encourage young people get hold of it early, because it doesn't look like it's doing much. And then once you get to 100,000, 150,000 as a balance, it just starts to rocket.
Yep.
But it's hard getting that buy-in. And I think there's another app. I know, Marty, you've got something to share, but there's another app that rounds up your expenses. So, you know, if you spend $4.50 on a coffee, you can nominate to round up to $5, and that 50 cents goes into the market.
Is that Raz? Is that yeah, I think that's Raz from...
I thought Raz did that too.
Does yeah. it? It's a great idea because it's money that you'll just never... You just won't miss that money.
Now, I'll challenge you on that.
It's what definitely about, raise.
You still got to buy the coffee, mate. Well, you're going to buy it anyway, I guess. That's what you're saying.
Well, you might buy pods. You might buy a pack of pods and round that
it's
up.
Also
go
the
back
other
to
crap.
Episode two.
Like, you know, the other crap where I bought two Ralph Lauren shirts instead of one. Like, there's the $100 extra that week that could have gone into my mm-hmm. micro investing app.
Yep.
And away, yep. it's locked away.
It's the habit, good. Isn't it? It's the forced habit. And then they're compounding. I mean, they're big numbers there. And like you said, you can be working at McDonald's and be sitting there at 60 in a very, very wealthy situation, better than 90% of the general public.
And I take it back just to round it out because I think it's super powerful and important. If you are a young, in your 20s, start to think about how you could put $10 away a day. And listening to those numbers, think about what is possible 10 or 20 years from now. It's possible for you, the listener, to do that. And if you're 30s, 40s, and you've got kids, how can you create a legacy for your kids by teaching them this stuff early and even helping to chip $5 or $10 a day into your child's account?
Exactly. And where the current generation is so lucky, these options, as much as we say we wish we had done this, these options weren't readily available to us when we were growing up. These apps weren't around. These platforms weren't around where you can jump online and have an app and get an ETF and we just weren't exposed to it because they actually didn't exist. So I think the exposure now means most people are across it and can do it really easily compared to when we were growing up.
And you make a good point, Jace, with Charlie, my seven-year-old, we've got Spaceship, which is one of those micro-investing tools. It shows you what all the companies they're invested in, what they're doing, ratios. But he has obviously chores and he gets paid on chores every week. And then I match that with another investment on top of those into that account and we watch it. So it's educating him to get him to know the impact of not so much compound interest yet, but he can see what it's doing. I can't wait till it comes back a bit because he'll also hurt a bit. He'll get that understanding of having a strategy for the long term. Yep. So, yeah.
Curious. So well, curious to that. Sorry, mate.
Sorry, just saying, like, if you wanted to invest in Amazon or Google or Apple, like, through these apps, if you didn't, if you're just going direct, you got to have $4,000 a share to be able to buy a share.
How much is Berkshire Hathaway? Thousands.
Yeah.
Whereas, and Charlie's an investor in Berkshire Hathaway.
There you go. Whereas this, you can get your little sliver, your $10 a day can go into Apple or Google or, these fastest growing companies around the world. So, yeah, check it out. Sorry, Nick.
I was just going to ask, what's the going rate for a seven-year-old now per hour?
Look, I think if he does his chores, he gets about $20 a week. That's making the bed, cleaning the floors, washing my car.
You tied up.
Yeah, I know. But it's true. You just said $10
a day.
Mate, he's on double wages, mate.
A day? You're shortchanging him $50 a week.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't listen. That's all right.
Thanks, Jace. I just wanted to bring up something we've been talking about in the past, but going back to crypto, the buzzword. But just read an article yesterday I thought was interesting, given its tax time, and we have spoken about this, and I just wanted to bring this up because it's showing that it is real, but... just on Bitcoin, before I talk about it, currently it's sitting at about $30,000 US from a valuation point of view. In April, it was sitting at $60,000. So again, goes to show the volatility and the reason why we need to diversify. But we talked about tax and are your gains on Bitcoin taxable? And second to that, is it traceable? And there's a lot of people say, it's in my wallet, how are they going to trace it? But I read an article yesterday, and Jace, I'll ask you if this is actually factual, but there's a Bitcoin ledger, which is a public ledger of all transactions between wallets, and anyone can get access to that information. They just have to be prepared to search a blockchain and get that info. The ATO is looking at that info, and last year there was 100,000 letters sent to Bitcoin owners, reminding them of their obligation to declare any wins. 2021, they're expecting that that number to go up to 300,000 letters that will go to taxpayers who they know have Bitcoin. So, you know, the crypto market has gone up 420% in the 2021 fin year. So there's a lot of people sitting on gains and the information is out there and the ATO are across it. So, Jace, these letters, have you had any clients been sent letters from the ATO?
Definitely.
Yep,
definitely. Look, beyond the letters as well, as I touched on in earlier episodes, it's popping up on the pre-fill report. So whenever you go to lodge your tax return or you have an accountant do it, it's going to pop up under a section around capital gains that says, do you have gains to report? Like, we know you've got cryptocurrency. Do you have gains to report? And we're also getting clients that forgot to tell us or, you know, happened to not mention it in previous years. They're now getting follow-up letters saying, hey, back in 2019, we think you bought and sold crypto. Do you have something you forgot to tell us? So they're kind of being a bit gentle at the moment. It's like giving everyone the chance to kind of come clean on what happened. But I mean, those kind of gains, you're talking 400% or more, there's taxes to pay on all of this along the way.
Okay. So again, we're not giving advice here, but if you're someone that's listening and you're thinking, geez, I sold some crypto or I'm buying and selling crypto, what would be a safe percentage? You can say, you know what, grab that much of it when you sell it, grab that much of your profit, put in another account so you don't have a problem come tax time. Would there be a safe percentage that you would say?
If you knew your marginal rate, you put your marginal rate aside.
Yep.
But if you're just going to average it out, put at least 30% aside for tax.
Yep.
Then you're averaging out. A lot of people kind of hover around the 20, 25% mark. Then you've got high income earners. If you're a high income earner and you know you are, you're putting aside 40, 45% because you've done your dough by selling. And a lot of people sell within the year too. They're buying and selling. They're not actively buying and selling enough to be a day trader, which means you're running a business, which means you don't get capital gains discount.
Yep.
But they're buying and selling within the 12 months, which means they don't qualify for the CGT discount. So
which is 50%.
50%,
right?
Yeah. So you're paying tax on the whole gain.
Mm.
It's a monster of an area in a sense of how much we need to be across it, you know, in the accounting industry.
So what signifies a day trader then?
Volume and activity. So actively day-to-day buying and selling, actively being in there.
So it can't just be four buys, four sells. It's got to be
sells a week or a day, or you're talking
a year.
A year, that would be more holding on a capital account because you're not actively doing it day-to-day to be running a business. So you got to think about the activity. Are you running an enterprise? Is it a business of buying and selling crypto? And if it's not a business, then you're generally holding it on capital accounts.
Well, that'd be great advice to our listeners because it's, again, if they want to go down that route, there might be a way to be able to do that more effectively rather than the capital gains.
Fantastic new revenue stream for the ATO.
Oh, big time.
Producer, Producer Tommy here. I've got a question about the crypto stuff.
Hey, bring it on.
Hi, Tommy.
Tommy, welcome.
Thank you. If you're, say, a lot of people hold the crypto to take it out, to take out your 30% to put aside for tax, it's a bit of a pain in the butt. To actually, and a lot of people don't want to bring it back to Australian dollars. So they want to sell out, keep it in their crypto account. And so you've done that multiple times. And then all of a sudden, that's probably why people aren't wanting to hold aside the tax money because they're not even seeing it as wins yet because they've just got it sitting there or they've converted it to another cryptocurrency.
Yep.
And so in terms of what's your advice to the people that think, oh, I can't be bothered because I've transitioned it to another crypto or I've just got it sitting there, I've reinvested it.
Mm.
Are those people needing to declare the gain?
Yeah, so each time you go in and out of the in and out of a particular parcel, that's triggering a capital gain or a capital loss. So it's like if I bought CommBank shares, sold them to buy NAB shares, ATO doesn't care that I've kind of gone back and got shares in a bank. I've gone from CommBank to NAB. If you bought Bitcoin and thought, bugger it, I want to be in Ethereum and Dogecoin or whatever it's called, or Titan, which if you know about Titan, you know, Mark Cuban did his balls on that. So every single time you're in and out, it's a capital gain or a, you know, the business sense, it's a day trading gain or loss as well. So we need to calculate that. You need full records of your ins and outs, the profits or losses. If you want to be good for your accountant, pre-prepare all that into a nice, neat spreadsheet if you download it off your exchange that you're using.
I have done that for you, Jess. So
thanks, Tommy.
We're all good
stuff, mate. Good question, though.
It also reduces your invoice, Tommy, so.
That's a lie. No, of course it does.
Well, look, have we finished with this? It's very
fascinating. I don't bring up crypto ever again.
No,
that was the last.
This is it.
Well, the listeners did say never to bring up crypto, and in 2 weeks we brought up blockchain and Well, it's what we're talking about.
Well, speaking of gambling, no, nice segue there. I wanted to talk about, like, there's been all these ads about, you know, bet with your mates. You know, you get a win, you all get excited together. You lose, you'll pat each other on the back. It'll be all right. We've just lost the house, but that's okay. But I wanted to give you some stats. In Australia, $1,023 per adult average yearly in gambling. Highest in the world. Highest in the world. Higher than Hong Kong. It's $1,000 in Hong Kong per adult. Wow. In the UK, in the US, it's $490. This is what's happening. Social casinos. So casinos that aren't even paying out money. They're just giving you wins on the screen and they're apps. And they're actually now like $5.3 billion. So more than all the casinos in Las Vegas, the Strip, they're making more money than actual casinos and they're not even paying out. What is going on here?
So yeah. Are these games or?
These are games. These are social games, social casinos. So they're okay. There's actual social, like there's actual other casinos online where you actually can win money too. But people are actually getting addicted to the game. So they're forking out funds and there's no return at all.
Is that a combination of like in the casinos and online? That's the Australia-wide number?
Yeah, that's right. So it's
that's staggering.
It's absolutely massive. And you go, the thing I was looking at here was going, you know, chance is maths and feeling lucky is magic. And everyone wants to feel lucky. Everyone wants to have that thrill of the win. And it's all about money and time. And just even slot machines, you look at those one-handed bandits. It used to be, you used to stand up at the casino before you went into real gambling and you'd probably have four to five spins per minute. Right now, they've given you a nice seat and it's 20 spins per minute. You just hit a button. So, and what they're also doing is it's manipulated. It used to be where you'd lose money really quickly, win or lose, and you'd be out. But they recognize they'd make more money the longer they kept you there. So it's a slower ride to the bottom. So now the timing's all about keeping you in the seat and they found that you would lose more money the longer you're there. So you won't get as big a wins and you won't get as big a losses, but it'll keep you in the game longer. So I thought that was really interesting. So it used to be high risk, high attrition. Now it's a slow ride to the bottom. Now what the evidence has shown is the pause and anticipation on the win is where the high is. That's where the dopamine release is. So it's not even getting the win. It's the anticipation of the win that hooks people in, which I thought was just absolutely fascinating. So it wasn't even the payout. 3 out of 4 people with gambling problems had anxiety, depression, or problems with alcohol. So you can see how addictive those addictive personalities can get hooked in. Sports gambling, you get addicted in 3.58 years. Pokies, 1.08 years on average.
It's the visual, do you think? It's the with the pokies? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Seeing the lights and...
Yeah, I think it's the thrill. I think it's the anticipation thrill. Everyone wants that win, but it's like it's not the actual win that gets the kick. It's that pause in between. And that's what everyone gets accustomed to. So it's quite bizarre. So online gambling is now exceeding all casino gambling around the world because people have access. Wow. It's like we say everyone's an investor now because they've got access to apps. So you're seeing so you go, what is going on here in regards to like people going into gambling and losing their money? And it's not a game of skill. It is just purely a game of math that's always orchestrated to the house winning. And that's what I just don't understand. Logically, I can't quite understand why would the poker is a game of skill. So poker, there's chance and there's also skill. So you can actually win a game of poker based on skill. Same as Monopoly. You've got, you know, you can win that game of Monopoly, even though there's a chance element, but you can learn which properties to get and position yourself for a win and do deals within that game. So to me, poker, blackjack's another one. There's a skill element to it where people, if they're prepared to put in the time, they can actually do really well. But the pokies and some of these app casinos, I mean, people are just losing money hand over fist, and it's getting worse. And Australians are at the top of the queue. That's what surprised me. I thought it might be Asia, but
it's probably a disposable income thing.
Could
really
be.
You know, we've all got money. Yep. Wealthy country, more to burn.
I think about 10 or so years ago, you'd have to go into a TAB to put a bet on the horses, for example.
Mm.
You know, thinking of online gambling. Now, everyone's got a TAB machine on their phone. You can get a Sportsbet account, a Ladbrokes account, all these bloody different things and all the different offers. And you think about all your mates sitting around at the pub and putting, you don't even have to get up. You
can the just pub, sit there on your work.
Phone. Or work.
Producer Tommy here again. Tax question, Jace. Do you have to pay tax on winnings through Sportsbet or any of these apps?
Unless you're a professional gambler, no.
Tax-free.
It's a hobby. Is that right?
It's a hobby. Let's not encourage our listeners to gamble, though, Tommy.
No. Well, crypto's a hobby for me.
Well, it's not bad. Good luck arguing that.
But I thought it would be interesting because we're talking about long-term investment and compounding interest. The biggest issue is patience. We all want a quick win. All of us do. We all like a quick win. But it's like that patience game makes the difference with a strategy behind it. But I just thought, wow, big numbers.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au.
It's that time of the podcast where we talk about losing it, where, you know, we celebrate the wins, of course, but what we learn through losing it is so much more. We want you to avoid the mistakes that we've made and other people we know have made. And today we are throwing to Jason to talk about, mental wealth and maybe give an example of what you've experienced out there, Jason, and share what you know.
Well, it's a bit of a backwards losing it today, Marty. Thanks for the intro. Let me lead into it. So my business partner and best mate, Greg, best man at my wedding when I eventually get there, if COVID doesn't stop screwing me over. Greg, over the last couple of years, business, stress, anxiety, burnout, and that led to a bit of a blowout. So the poor fella put on a bit of weight and he was quite unhappy. Now, if he had done nothing about it, which is what we want to get into talking about how our physical health affects our mental health, the guy would have spiraled out of control. And he was not happy. He was, pretty miserable to be around. And work-wise, he was not as productive as he has been in the past. And off the back of COVID and lockdowns, we started talking about what we could do to turn that around. I said to Greg, it'd be great if we just ran every day, 20 minutes, just got out and got some fresh air. So Greg's brain, the way he works is once he gets into a habit and a routine, which is everything when it comes to health and your well-being, I believe, if you get good habits and good routines, it changes everything. So we started with 20 days, 20 minutes a day. It is now day 256 for Greg. He has ran every day for 256 days and turned his life around. And I shot him a message earlier and just said, can I talk about this? And I want to share some of your insights as to what changed in your life. So what could have been a losing it in a bad way where Greg's life spiraled out of control, it's a losing it where he actually dropped 15 kilos. He's the fittest and healthiest he's ever been in his life. And he's operating at a level he never knew that he could. So he talked about, I said, mate, before and after, what was life like before and after you changed and you started running every day? He said, I now have more energy. I get outside for fresh air. It allows me time to think. I get to listen to audiobooks and podcasts, and I just feel better. It lets me plan for the day. And outside of that, his energy with the family, the time he spends with his wife and kids, because he's more productive during the day at work, it then means at nighttime he's switching off from technology and spending time with his wife and kids. And his life is totally different now to what it was before that. Absolutely incredible. So it's a bit of a backwards losing it. It's a losing it about how he lost 14 or 15 kilos and ran every day. But I think where I wanted to turn this around for the listener was 20 minutes a day, right? It's such a small percentage of your time. And people make excuses and say, oh, I don't have time. I don't have the resources. I can't afford a gym membership. But as simple as going for a walk, going for a run, doing some push-ups, whatever's your poison, is enough to change your life.
Yeah, well, if you don't have time, ultimately you won't have time. Your longevity will be decreased. And I've put my hand up, and that's something I haven't been great at. I've always come out of a generation of being, workaholics, basically. And anyone that starts up a business, twice should be just shot and killed because it's hard enough once. So it's there's a lot of pressures that come with it. And one of the things I always found that was really difficult is I'm a focused person on habit, but it seems to be siloed. So if it's the business, it's the business. And what I always had to get better at was actually putting time back into myself. So Greg's is an amazing story. And I found that on the back end. I had to do that when I was 36 years of age because, you know, I was working pretty much, you know, 8 o'clock to 11 p.m. at night, just ridiculous hours. And all I was thinking about was the business. And I remember waking up one day and just going, I was sitting in the couch watching, I won't say what I was watching,
Sullivan's.
It was this. Bloody hell, the Sullivans. You blokes, I tell you. Just because I'm 48, grey hair, Sullivans. If anyone doesn't know what the Sullivans is, YouTube it. If it is on YouTube, it might be a bit early. But I remember watching a morning show and just not being able to get out of the chair. And I said to Cole, I can't move. I literally cannot move. And it was the scariest moment. I was 35 years of age. I was fit at that stage. And I'm going, what is going on here? I've never had this happen before. And it was just, I just didn't know how to put my foot off the accelerator and put time into myself. So I wasn't playing as much sport anymore. Even my social circles were becoming smaller because I was so focused in building a business that I was forgetting about myself. And I'm just fortunate I got a great wife that understands the journey that we were on. But really that made me make a lot of changes in my life, and, you know, with meditation and just getting and setting that appointment for yourself, like seeing yourself as important as the appointment in the business, like actually seeing your partner as absolutely important. Like they suffer at the expense of those long work hours. Your kids suffer. So I had to really realign my life because there's no point having a nice car in the driveway with no one to drive with. And that's, you know, that's a really, it's a profound statement, but that's what I felt. I just go, what's it all about here? And, but look, it comes from your personal drivers. I know that, you know, having like not much money growing up, we always had enough to eat, had a roof over our head. It was fine. Right. But my driver was to do as well as I could, as quick as I could. And I realized that wasn't the answer, and there had to be a whole reinvention of who I was. So I did stuff, 10 days meditation, noble silence, just got right in touch and turned that around. But it was a pretty gripping moment. That's for sure.
What I really like about Greg's story is the realization about how much he could improve everything else just by getting that 20 minutes. And it's no, you know, we're not discounting the fact that business is hard work and you've got to work bloody hard to start a business. We've all been there. We've all done it. However, with Greg, what he's realized is that he can actually be a better business person just by taking that 20 minutes, and not just a better business person, a better father, probably a better lover, Greggy. but it's the realization that you just fall into this trap. And, you know, for me, like, and we'll talk about this, but I'm very strict on making sure the health's looked after because I know that it makes me better in business. And when you see efficiencies go up in your day-to-day routine just because of that 20 minutes, that's what I really liked. And, you know, again, there's no compensation for hard work, but you've got to be working at your optimum level.
And the walking's a big one. Like for me, that was the first step, like in getting back, was like, just go for a walk, just get up, go for a walk. And then it was the consistency of that. So we discount, sometimes we think we got to overstretch and push ourselves to the limits again, but just walking every day and knowing you had that time for yourself, that mental time for yourself, but also that physical activity, just things changed around really quickly from that point onwards. It was, and even in health, just not eating butter, you know, something so simple.
And just to round it out, not to take all the credit, but to round it out, have a think about your mates and your other family members and the people around you who may not be in the right headspace right now, might be doing it tough. Greg's 256-day run streak started with me saying, Greggy, I need an accountability buddy. Like, because I wasn't feeling good. I wasn't feeling healthy and good about myself after lockdown, you know, sitting around drinking too much booze at nighttime and feeling a bit sorry for ourselves because we were locked up. That message to Greg saying, I need someone to run with, like even virtually, we were remotely doing it from our own homes. So have a think about, you know, who around you could be losing it? Who's out of control at the moment in your friendship circle or your family? Reach out to them and work on it together. Find a way to...
You make great points. And I think Nick said it really well in regards to everyone's busy in this day and age. It's what are you going to do about it for yourself and your friends and your social circles? There's a lot of impact you can have by just doing the basics really well. We tend to forget about ourselves, and we've got to make sure, yes, we've got career plans, business plans, but we need personal plans too. And that is absolutely important, because without that, you haven't got anything. And that's it's huge.
And the social aspect's huge. And we've got a group of guys, we catch up every Friday morning, and we do just a really not much of a workout, because we're all pretty tired by Friday, but it's just the camaraderie. And you leave that group. So we've had the same group together for about 2 years, and you look forward to that, because obviously you're doing some exercise. But then we always grab a quick coffee afterwards, and it's like literally a 10-minute chat, but we talk about absolute rubbish. But it's just awesome. And you start Friday just on top of the world, because you've done a bit of a workout. You've caught up with people that you haven't really – it's a lot of the guys we work with, and you're always talking about work stuff. So all that is dropped. And, yeah, it's the social aspect of being around people and doing it with other people too. So I really like that you said that, you had a training buddy.
Yeah, and even in your teams, like, we're putting together a wellness plan just even within the business, because we acknowledge that people are busy, and we need to do this even from a leadership perspective, because they're really important. We've got to make sure we're a well-balanced company as well. But I think what Nick was saying, what you're saying, really resonates is for me, even meditating before work with a couple of guys in the office has made a big difference, because it's just set a really good foundation to launch from the day rather than just flying into it. It only takes 5-6 minutes, but a great platform. And I know when I wake up in the morning, always like just the 2 or 3 minute meditation. I don't focus on breath. I just let my brain go. And the same at night, I let everything that's in my head just go, let it go nuts and release. And then that just gives me a consistency and sort of anchors the start of the day and the end of the day. And I found that was really, really useful. It doesn't have to, like you said, it doesn't have to be a lot, but it just has to be consistent and add value to you. You might find your own way, and that's okay too.
Well, Marty, now that you've said that, it kind of leads into our one percenters, because as you said, it doesn't have to be a lot, and it doesn't have to be, it could be 5 minutes a day of meditation, and then the outcomes of what that does for your life has huge effects. So today, the mental wealth discussion, or how our mental health can affect our wealth effectively, the reason behind this conversation, we're kind of underpinning it with habits and talking about having great habits. And I'll probably throw it to you, Nick, because I think you've inspired me a little bit, or a lot, when it comes to certain aspects of your experimenting and how you've landed where you are with your health journey. Maybe start off by telling us a bit about some of the things you do and why.
Yeah, and just to go back a few steps, the reason we wanted to talk about this is, again, we're all business owners, and we've all had our issues or our little episodes. And my episode, to be open, was probably about 7 or 8 years ago, when the business started to get a few employees and get busy, not being able to sleep, thinking about business every time I went to bed, had a serious bout of insomnia for about 6 to 12 months, which nearly sent me mad. Just ask my wife. Just feeling anxious all the time, and anxious about work and about life. And I realized that this wasn't normal. Well, definitely the sleeping wasn't normal, but then sort of even fixed the sleeping, then still had the anxiety. So that led me down the path of, talking to some other people that were doing mindfulness stuff. And
Nick, can I ask, when was the moment you realized it wasn't normal? Because that was a big moment for me.
When I was up at around 3 o'clock in the morning, filling up the gaps in the window, between the window and the blind, with cardboard. Oh, and blaming the streetlight out the front for not being able to sleep. So
that bloody streetlight.
Yeah. So that's when I realised I had to sort it out. So, and it sounds dramatic, but I can guarantee you half of our listeners have been through it, but particularly if they're business owners or they're in roles where they're running teams or high-pressure sales environments. Everyone's been through it. But for me, it was just realising and accepting it, and then thinking, okay, well, how can I fix this? So for me, I've tried everything really, and there's no perfect formula. It'll depend on what you like. And I've got mates, both of you guys, for example, do this, but I've tried meditation. I've tried cold therapy, which is ice baths. There's the obvious one of exercise. There's breathing techniques. There's float tanks, which you're going to talk about, Jace. So for me, it's just like the advice I would give is just try everything. Just see what works for you. You know, you talked about walking, and I walked for 4 or 5 months because I had an injury, and I'd get up first thing in the morning and go for a 20-minute walk, no podcast, no nothing. And it was just, that was a form of meditation for me, because all the stuff that would go through my head, fresh air, see some greenery.
Movement meditation. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's you know, whatever floats your boat, basically. And, you know, I love to mountain bike. So for me, I could be a completely, you know, worked up person on a Friday or Saturday. If I go for a mountain bike ride on a Sunday, I'll come home and I'm a completely different person. And Alicia, my wife, will actually comment on that, that you are a different person once you've done that. So work out what works for you. And it doesn't have to be consistently the same thing. I switch things up every 6 or so months, just depending on how I'm feeling. So at the moment for me, I try and journal. I've taken that up with goals. I meditate in the mornings, and I exercise. And then, you know, we do the ice bath stuff, or it's getting in the bay at the moment because the bay's more than cold enough. So
Nick, what does the ice bath give you? Give everyone an understanding of what you get out of that.
Yeah, well, look, it's... For me, most of it's mental, to be honest. If I'm going to say where I get the biggest value, and Jace, I'll get you to chime in here because you've done it yourself, but for me, it's the mental aspect. Mm. It's getting into that ice bath, because it's probably the hardest thing you do, or the cold showers.
Breaking through that barrier.
It's breaking through that barrier. And once you've done that, you feel like you could do anything the rest of the day. So I really love the mental aspect of it, but the health benefits are endless, like increased metabolism, which comes from increasing your brown fat levels, which is created when you shiver to warm up, boosting your immune system, because we're used to, you know, our ancestors were used to being cold, and we're used to being hot, and our bodies would react by increasing our immune system. So, you know, I generally don't get sick. I generally manage to keep weight off, and I don't do a lot of exercise anymore. I still do quite a bit of exercise, but it's not like I used to, and I put a lot of it down to that. But for me, probably the biggest thing is the mental aspect. But if you Google it, you can go down a rabbit hole around the science.
I think the routine of it too, you know what day you do the ice bath, you look forward to it, you G yourself up, you're getting worked up for it. And I remember the first time doing it with you guys at your place, and that anticipation of, oh my God, how am I going to plunge myself into this, I think it was 0 degree or 1 degree water with 12 bags of ice, you know, just completely submerged up to your neck. And then it was that moment that you're in, that exhilaration, the breath, and the next thing there's 6 to 8 minutes of just pure bliss where somehow you're in there, and it's, then when you get out, again, that rush of adrenaline, like, oh, I've done it. I broke through the barrier and I feel amazing. The circulation, you know, your blood circulation, and the best night's sleep ever afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't say that. The deepest sleep, for whatever reason. So actually the main thing it does is decreases your inflammation. So the deepness of the sleep after it is something that's definitely the best night of the week. And it's also the community aspect. Like when we were doing it at my house on Wednesday nights, like there's the same group of people every Wednesday night. You're all doing it. You know, you're all getting around each other. You know, don't go 6 minutes, go 7 minutes, you know. So it's the community aspect of it as well, I think.
Well, we miss you at Birchie's place.
I love that,
sure.
Because inflammation, I think, is one of the major contributors to anxiety as well. So you go, when I listen to you talk about it, it goes, makes total sense. And I think anxiety in general is very prominent throughout the community, through business owners, professionals, anyone. But I think particularly people that keep stretching, like I was thinking about this just yesterday, going, you're always trying to up the bar. And that's going to bring a level of anxiety when you do that quite naturally, because your body and mind hasn't experienced that new behavior. So I just think, but if you're constantly doing that, at some point maybe the mentality and the physicality breaks down. Like I equate it to lifting weights at a gym. You know, yes, you're always wanting to lift more, you know, and manage it, but at some point your body can't do that anymore without breaking something. So I think you putting time back into ice baths and really taking care of yourself is really how you would recuperate from a physical exercise where you're pushing too hard and you can break. So you've got to be careful mentally to make sure you're really aware of how you're feeling. And for me, sleep, like Nick, is like I can tell if I'm waking up at 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm agitated and I'm going to sleep exhausted and then I can't fall back to sleep, that's where I go, something's out of alignment and I've got to take proactive steps to get that sleep back into order, because that's like a superpower. Good sleep is like you feel rejuvenated as well.
Well, there's so many, and you know, I don't want to get stuck on the science of it because I've actually not a scientist at all, but there's so much research around our brains and not getting any rest, which is why when you do meditate, you can't stop your brain from thinking, because you know, we no longer go to the coffee shop and order a coffee and then just aimlessly walk around thinking about things that happened that day. We're straight on our phones and we're looking at social media, or we're looking at realestate.com, or we're looking at car sales because we want to buy a car. We don't have those moments in the taxi where we just look out the window, take things in, think about what happened that day, straight on our phones as soon as we get our moment. So our brains actually never stop anymore, and they don't have that time washing the dishes. Like, I read an article that you should meditate when you wash the dishes. Focus on the dish, you're washing it. It's actually relaxation. But what are we doing now? And I'm to blame. We've got something in our ears and we're listening to
being present
to a podcast. So
You're always distracted.
Yeah. So you've got to find that time. Like, your brain's a muscle and probably the most important one. And you've got to find your time to rest it. And you know, the other thing I'll say, just with all of this stuff, and again, we're not stupid. We know it's very difficult, particularly work, business, kids. We know it's hard to find that time and that routine. You know, I don't have kids yet. That's something that will come soon. And my mates have got kids, and they always joke, "Oh, you wait till you have kids." You know, and I totally accept that. That things will change when I have kids. But at the same time, work out when that moment is for you that you can get that half an hour or an hour, or you know, work out or accept the fact that it might not be every morning at 6 a.m. Mm. Some mornings it might be 9. Some mornings it might be 8, you know. But
get up at 5. Well, you know, like you said, it's like I could still fit a meditation and walk in before everyone gets up.
Yeah.
But I think that's great advice, because, again, we can all build stories as to why not to do it. I've done the same, I know. And I go, but there's great stories as to why to do it. And I just think, even me, a big factor with the meditation was everyone was going, focus on breath. So bring it back to focusing on breath, focusing on breath. All I do all day is focus, right? What I actually realized, what I needed, was to let my mind just bloody go and let the thoughts just go chaotic. And then I found the stillness within that. And I go, that's what I needed. I needed a release, and it was like a holistic release. Now, you're not going to read that in the books, but that's just what worked for me. And I think what you're both saying is finding things that work for you that are really important.
Actionable on that for someone who hasn't meditated or tried and understand how to do it, how it works, is the Headspace app. I think the guy's name's Andy. His voice is absolutely therapeutic.
Very nice voice.
Ever I've heard one, not like mine right now, but starting Headspace, that journey.
Sexy voice, you.
A bit husky. The Headspace journey of doing that was, you know, to touch on meditation. I didn't understand it enough. Everyone talked about it. This is going back a little while now, but I thought I was a bit the same. I'm wired all day, every day. The brain's just constantly on. And it was like, well, I need to switch off. But in starting the meditation course through Headspace, it talks about, don't overthink it. Let it go. Let your brain go to places. Let it think of stuff and then let it go. Like it, but it actually talks you through how to get into the routine and habit of that 5 or 10 minutes of meditation, how to do it. So it starts with the breathing and then this and that. But once you've learned it, obviously you don't have to use the Headspace app all the time. It's something you can manage yourself. But that starting the journey with a bit of guided meditation, I think was really important for myself to get into it.
It's a brilliant starting point. It's a really good starting point. I'd recommend anyone start that way. But ultimately, you want to be with yourself. That's where you ultimately want to get to. And by releasing the clutter out of your head, what you find is the real gold that's in there. And it comes to the surface where it just doesn't have a chance. It's like a cluttered room. Sometimes you've got, you know, you've got a 50-buck note that you never knew was there. But it's there. You've got gold there that you can access that really leads you to the path of greater performance and in all areas. And I think that's the... I mean, I picked that up by doing a 10-day Noble Silence course of Vipassana, which literally nearly killed me. Like the first 2-3 days, because you just don't talk for 10 days and you're with yourself. So you can't even tell when you're sleeping or when you're meditating. And in 1 minute, you feel like you're the best person in the world. Then the next minute, you feel like the worst person. But the one thing I recognized was every thought was represented in the body. by a feeling. And when there was no stimulation and no clutter building upon clutter, you recognized, oh, that bad experience is in my finger, or that good experience is coming through my wrist. And you're going, holy crap. And this is releasing out of your body, out of the physicality. And then by about day three, I wanted to try and pretend I had a tooth infection just so I could get out. And not everyone survived it. There was about three or four people that left after two or three days. It was just too much to be with themselves for that time. But by day six, you realized you were cleared out. And there was just this lovely stillness and energy in the body. And you go, holy crap, I really don't want anyone to talk to me ever again. But yeah. But you can't live there either. You can in moments.
10 days of not talking. I couldn't even.
You can't acknowledge anyone. You can't kill anything. So that includes mosquitoes, which I did on day two. And was straight in with the Buddha and stepped on a frog on day seven. I swore when I stepped on the frog. You're not allowed to swear. So, yeah, it was a big. And I saw two kangaroos mating, which was the highlight of the event. There was no stimulation. Yeah, so it was, yeah. But it was one of the best things I ever did, because whenever things get overwhelming, I can quickly access that space, because it was for such a long time. And I haven't done it again. And there were people there, corporate people, that have done it two or three times. And they said every time they find out something more about themselves that they didn't recognize, and their performance shifted up as well. So it was really powerful when I got to talk to other corporates and we shared experiences on it. But yeah, that's an extreme, which I tend to be. But I go, you could do this 5 minutes a day.
To wind it back to something not as extreme, but in your own head and space where you're absolutely trapped. Have you ever tried a float tank?
Well, this is what we're coming to you for, because I thought it was something to do with fishing or a swimming pool or something. But what's going on, Jace? What have you been doing?
So float tank, one of those big contraption devices with water. You get inside it, you shut the lid, the light turns off, and for 90 minutes you are floating in water. That's a really salty, buoyant water. Yeah, it's pitch black, 90 minutes floating in water. So float tank, pretty self-explanatory, I guess, there. But I mean, the first time I did that, I was going absolutely bonkers in my brain. I don't think I listened to the instructions enough going into it. So I think for the first 10 minutes, I was like, how do I know when my time's up? How do I know when to get out? Does the lady come back and knock on the lid and I'm in here in the nude and like it's a bit weird? Like, what's going on?
You have to trust the process.
Yeah. And then I reckon between 20 minutes and 70 minutes, it was just complete nothingness.
Hit the zone.
Like just in the zone, and, you know, it felt like you're gliding down a river at some point and your brain's taking you different places. And I'd gone through recently before that, you know, some of these float tanks, my mother passed away. And then those emotions, like I was being taken to these emotional places and going on this journey and letting things out. And then by the end of it, when the light turns back on and the water starts flowing and you jump out, there's this stillness and calmness that, you know, I ended up going to work and one of my colleagues was like, you seem really relaxed. Like you're so chilled. And look, I think that float tank is like a combination of meditation and switching off and letting your brain run free and whatnot. And if you haven't tried it, and again, what Nick said was experimenting, trying new things, you know, that you haven't tried before, to find what works for you. And I don't necessarily think of float tanks for everyone, because being stuck in a little box might send some people a little bit claustrophobic crazy. But it was something that I really thoroughly enjoyed, and I'll be going back to do it kind of at least once a fortnight, once a month, just as that doing something different, trying to figure out what works. Outside of that, something that I'm doing at the moment, which I've found really beneficial, is an alcohol detox. I think, you know, people regularly sip a couple of beers or a few wines or a whiskey and whatever else, but the actual knowledge of how alcohol affects your sleep, how it affects your mood, because once you drink an alcoholic drink, your dopamine, whatever, spikes, but then your body's natural reaction is to bring you back down by releasing a depressant. So alcohol actually depresses you. If anyone's doing Dry July, I would say download the alcohol experiment book on Apple Books or whatever you use. It's 30 chapters in 30 days. So if you're going to do Dry July, you might as well read a book and get some of this knowledge and education into you. But yeah, experimenting. I mean, that for me, going alcohol free for the next 60 or 60 days is something that I haven't done for a very long time, and I'm figuring out how it feels for me and what it does for my health journey and training for a half marathon and a marathon later this year. So we've all got different things that we do to get ourselves into that mental zone.
I love what you're saying, because, you know, we all think we should be in the shark tank and get busier instead of being in the float tank, right? Yeah. But what people don't realize is when you're in those, and I asked Trevor Hendy this, who was an Ironman champion back in the 80s and 90s, and he's big on mindfulness. And he said, you know, people always think that meditation is not linked to performance. I think that attitude's changing. They think it's relaxing and you're not performing. But he goes, you find your ultimate performance, your intuitive performance, by accessing these different states of being. And he goes, it's not to perform any less. It's actually to drive performance. So, and I think people are really tapping into this, that this is a superpower, and you can do things simply and effectively. It's not about being busier. Mm. It's being about more effective and focused in the right areas, which that type of meditation connects you into. And I think once you've got that, then people are astounded at the results you can get, but in how you do it as well. Because instead of going into 9 places, you can go into 1 and maneuver very quickly, which gives you more time and performance on effort. Yep. So I think that's really huge. So, yeah, but most people don't recognize.
I've got a nugget of gold for people, and I don't know if you've seen it or you might have come across it, and I'm pretty sure we all know about it. Emma Murray. So she did a 21-day on Instagram. It's called the page is High Performance Habits. Now, Emma Murray is the high performance trainer of the Richmond Football Club. So it was the year they won their first grand final was the year Emma Murray started at the club. Her story and journey is absolutely incredible, and I won't do it justice, but I'm pretty sure her son, the day she was meant to start work there, her son became a paraplegic or a quadriplegic jumping off the pier at Black Rock. But she had to basically front up to work and kind of, you know, to keep the family going and everything else. But I won't get into that part. The high performance habits of what Emma Murray did for the Richmond Football Club was exactly that. Like, you know, you talk about, you know, the training and the lifting weights and the running, but taking it back to meditation, understanding what's going through their brain, understanding anxiety, their sleep, how they fit in a certain place in the team and what their role is. All that stuff is mental edge. So if you've got all of these football players that have a similar level of physical ability, but what is making Richmond Football Club come in and being able to win these flags 3 out of 4 years, they tie it back to Emma Murray and high performance habits. So Dustin Martin, working with her, like the way he was able to change his mindset and his routine to suit himself, like everyone's got a different way they'll operate. So if you want to look into that high performance habits, it's 21 videos over 21 days. And completely changes. I mean, it's like something simple like not sleeping with your phone in your bedroom, so that the first thing you do in the morning isn't to pick up your phone and open up Facebook or Instagram. And also, you're not hitting snooze, snooze, snooze because your alarm's going off in the living room. You're getting up out of bed and walking into the living room to turn your alarm off, and you're up. You're up and good to go. So that's one I would say is absolutely actionable by our listeners to go and check that out and make some changes to your life that are simple and easy.
Well, it's connecting with your body and your mind, right? And just understanding what's happening. So one of the big things for me now is I see the signs. So being through, you know, insomnia and then some anxiety through work, you can see the signs now. And because you're more connected, whether it's physically or mentally, you can see the signs and do something about it. So, you know, again, it's just continue to try different things. You don't have to go spiritual on this. And,
no.
And I know society's changing and there's more acceptance around meditation, whereas, you know, 10 years ago, you would have been a hippie if you meditated. But meditation isn't necessarily sitting in a room, in a dark room, trying not to think of things. It's whatever works for you. Walking, riding your bike, float tank, swimming, like... Mm. You just stare at the black line and there's a lot that goes through your mind. But people need to understand that all that stuff that goes through your mind is part of meditation, you releasing it, thinking about it, so you can have the clear mind, like you said, Marty, and get that stuff out of your head.
Yeah, it is. And we are surrounded. I mean, in a lot of, you know, there's a lot of toxicity in the world as well, like a lot of, you know, there's energy, and we know that. But again, it just that clear out just frees you up of it every day. And I think Nick's right. You pick it up as you get older. Like, I made adjustments in regards to the meditation. I did 40 days of yoga just to try something different, right? And it was quite a unique experience. I gave up alcohol at 40 because what I started to recognize is, why am I doing damage to myself and why? You know, that was a big, how do I look after 5-year-old Marty like I would my son? Mm. And that's really important as you guys are going into fatherhood, is we all talk about creating a legacy out of what we do for our families and, you know, what we want financially for them, but create a legacy of being an amazing father, an amazing leader based on being really connected. And that's one of the things I had to learn, was how to be really kind to my 5-year-old self. How did I nurture that person? That was a game changer for me. All of a sudden, I put in time in the right areas. And I thought, if I'm willing to do it for my son, why wouldn't I do it for myself as well?
Well, you're the engine room.
My partner.
You know, and we talk about business and how much we all love business, but what's the one thing that will completely derail that? It's your relationships, whether it's with your wife or your kids or your health. So generally, if you get those things right, the business part's really easy. So why wouldn't you put time into those? You know, like your date nights with your wife, making sure you have those time. You know, we talked about, Jase, catching up with your mates, and you mentioned, Marty, losing contact with your good mates, but you're in the car, give them a call.
Yeah, that's right.
Make sure you go to dinner once a month. Whenever it is, just keep that connection, because we can just fall completely into our businesses. And then, you know, if your things aren't right at home, it's nearly impossible to run your business,
in
my opinion.
Nick, you're right, because really coming out of our era, you know, back in the Sullivan's era, you're reinventing yourself, because we would play sport with our friends. There was no technology back in the 80s and early 90s. It was, you know, once you went home from work, the phone was at work and that was it. It was people time. So it's like now there's this digital technology where we feel connected, but we're probably as distant from people as we've ever been. So I think really that re-engagement of those social circles, maybe playing tennis in a team, or just re-engaging and finding a new way. Technology's great, don't get me wrong. It's just not at the expense of that, you know, which was really connected. And I think it can all work together. But I know people my age are still redefining that for themselves, and you guys are onto it, which is really important. But I think our demographic can do a lot better in that. So,
100%. I think quick one as well. Last week, look at the way you can change up some of the things that you're doing to add the physical or mental element into it to do something good for yourself. So last week, two of my meetings, rather than being in an office, sitting down in a meeting room in front of a screen, were at the tan with a long black, doing a lap of the tan, talking to a client.
I love that. I love that.
You know, we got nearly 10,000 extra steps in getting to the tan and back, drinking a coffee. But some of the two of my best meetings last week were the two meetings at the tan with a coffee, walking. And this just it flowed. It was fantastic.
Mate, I love that. On the sunny coast, we did networking. We'd get all business professionals together on the beach first thing in the morning, and just, yeah, having beautiful scenery and just talking shop and enjoying each other. It was a great idea. And I love that diversity in thinking and testing new ideas and seeing what works. I think that's brilliant, mate. Really good.
And it's taken, just on that again, how you can change things up. So I know my cousin and I were always like, oh, we've got to catch up for a beer. He recently had a child and little Noah, but now it's like, let's catch up for brunch. Like, should we go for a walk and go grab a coffee? Like, it doesn't always have to, you can change the focus to be away from alcohol and sitting in a pub over a Palmer, and you can make it something good for you.
Well, dinners turn to brunches for myself and friends when we catched up, because it just made more sense, and we're a bit more tired at night. So, but yeah, you've given up alcohol for a few days. I'm 10 years in April. So that
25 days, Marty, don't discount it too much.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's a great start, but it's like it is the beginning, but you're already seeing the upside of it. But that certainly shifted my social circles, which you're reinventing as well. But it's that was amazing, coming off the back of that episode at 35 when I couldn't move one morning. I'm thinking, holy crap. But they're the things when I talk about caring for the 5-year-old, I go, would I give my 5-year-old self alcohol? Now, that seems so crazy, but it's so profound when you really think about it. And what do I want to show Charlie moving forward? What's my demonstration? Because it doesn't matter what you say, it's what you do. And again, I'm at the extreme, so everyone can do things holistically. But I go, that was my choice in going, how do I invigorate my life at another level? So
I'm inspired, Marty, definitely inspired.
Mate, you've done well. It's not an easy thing.
Guys, this has been episode 13 of The Numbers Game. Absolute ripper. And I know we can keep talking about the mental wealth things that we do and our habits and routines. And look, I definitely think there's probably another episode in this one day down the track. Love to get some listener feedback. But Marty, what's been your takeaway today?
My takeaway is put time into your most valuable asset, which is yourself, and the rest will grow. Nick?
I love that, Marty, because you can't do everything that you want to do without looking after the engine room. For me, it was the experiment, the experimental side. It doesn't have to be spiritual. Whatever works for you, just keep trying things until you find something that works and then put the time aside and get it done.
Yep. And off the back of experimenting, I follow the same thing of changing up your life and doing some different things that you wouldn't usually do and bringing in some healthier habits than what you have in the past, whether it's the alcohol detox or focusing on your sleep and even your eating. Guys, if you've got any feedback on this episode, reach out to us. hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au. Thanks for listening.
And look, if this episode resonates with you and you want to share it with friends and families, please do so, because we think there's a lot of value in it. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Game over.
See you next week.